Shalom, damn it! All my friends, my enemies, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my little neck of the neighborhood. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am delighted and excited to be talking to a funny lady, a smart lady, a talented lady, someone who helps people with their lives. Well, God knows I could use it. She has written a book that, oh, there it went. Well, I just steal that book from me. Where the hell's my copy? You better, I hope you signed it too. Anyway, her name, I thought her name was Jen Cohen. Nice Jewish name, right? Cohen? With the Levites and the Israels? No. No, she had to get weird on us. Something strange happened at Ellis Island. And it's not Jen Cohen. It wasn't Ellis Island.
It's never changed. My last name has never been changed. So We've done research.
We've done research on the way. So her name is actually Jen Cohen. C-O-K-E-N. So we're doing a very Coke and Dagger episode of the Dave's Got My Radio program. Ha ha. So where does Coke and derive from? Where's your family from?
Well, my dad did that, genealogy swab.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Turkish. And no. Actually, the word Koken means bridge.
Really?
Can you believe that? And we thought it would have been changed. We were told it had been changed. We went all back through the ship's records. I just hired a genealogist a year ago for my dad's Father's Day.
Yeah.
And no change. That's what it's been all along.
So Koken means bridge in Turkish.
And according to my dad's swab, like, he's 70% Turkish.
And what's the other 30?
I don't know.
Oh, well.
I don't remember. That was just striking that it was, some Russian. We're all related.
Right? Yeah,
Russia, Ukraine.
But you know that you're Jewish.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Through and through.
So how Jewish were you growing up?
Well, when my parents were married or after they got divorced, So my dad's grandmother's side of the family, yeah. Orthodox Jewish.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A cantor.
Ooh.
A band leader for Tsar Nicholas II.
Well, yeah.
They all left because of the pogroms. My dad's dad's side of the family, everyone was snuck out under a melon wagon.
Under a melon wagon.
A melon wagon. Wow. Their melons were under a melon wagon.
Sounds like my honeymoon night. But, I don't even know what that means.
I don't either. I don't want to go there.
But you weren't raised Orthodox.
I wasn't raised Orthodox, but conservative, yeah. And then reformed, and I was bat mitzvahed and then confirmed at 10th grade in my synagogue in Cleveland. Wanted to be a rabbi at one point, just like you.
No kid.
Then the feeling passed.
Oh. Yeah. Why did it pass?
Passover?
Oh!
No.
Damn it. No. Do you remember any of your Haftorah portion?
No.
Oh, you're lying.
No.
How about any of the prayers? No, yeah, no.
Oh, yeah, all the prayers.
Ooh, do me a prayer. Do me a prayer. Let me get my talis around me. Hold on. Oh, this is exciting. Hold on. Oh, there's my book. Yeah. All right.
Do you want me to do the Aliyah, or the blessing of the Torah?
I'll put something on your head.
Okay, good. Really want me to sing this?
I do.
Baruch Hu Et Adonai Hamavarach.
Yeah.
Baruch Adonai Hamarach Le'olam Va'en. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam. More?
It's catchy and you can dance to it.
I
love it. Oh my God, ladies and gentlemen.
Just let me do that.
Jen and you got not a bad voice either, by the way.
Thank you. I sang with a rock and roll band in Poland once.
You sang? So it was a Polish rock and roll band. What did they do, polkas?
No, I sang Me and Bobby McGee. By Janis Joplin.
Please do. in Polish?
No.
Oh,
in English, after a couple of shots of, let's say a few shots of potato vodka.
Yeah, that would do it.
So that's when I know the words. Let's say I haven't had the vodka this morning. I don't drink anymore, so I can't really, want me to.
Did you have to give up the drinking, or you just don't bother to?
No, I'm just saying this morning I didn't have any vodka before coming here.
Oh, okay, I did. I had three shots of the good stuff.
You didn't? Well, see, because I can't smell it. That's the beauty of vodka.
Monster down in Baton Rouge. I don't remember the rest of that.
Well, that's why I sang it for them, because they didn't know the words, and I did. And so I went up to them, and they were like, well, what are the words? It was my friend's band. And I said, well, I have to sing it in order to tell you. And they looked at me, and they're like, you're going to get up on stage. And I was petrified.
Yeah,
but I did.
What was the name of the band?
I couldn't tell you, something in Polish, but I sang with them all week.
Whoa, way cool. Oh, what were you doing in Poland in the first place?
I had a frequent flyer ticket I had to use, and my friend was teaching English in Poland, and is the only person I knew who was overseas. And I said, I can get a free ticket, can I come visit? So we were in Warsaw, saw the wall of the Warsaw ghetto. We went to Krakow. I went to Auschwitz.
How was Auschwitz? Did you have a good time?
Well, here's the crazy part. It was the middle of winter, February, and I was the only, it was a freaky, freaky experience. I mean, I was the only person there until I saw this group of Canadians from afar, asked them where the visitor center was, which was weird to have a visitor center at Auschwitz.
Right.
Right? So then.
It's near the pool, actually.
Well, yeah, by the cabanas, where the cabanas always are, where they have the drinks with the umbrellas.
I know, right?
Yeah, right there. Just take a left.
There's Cyclone B martinis. They're kind of cool.
Oh, my God. It's too soon, Dave. Yeah, I'm sorry, Rabbi Saul. It's too soon. Too soon. But anyway, so, Auschwitz, of course, was the camp where the Red Cross would come and tour it. So everything was, like, beautiful and bricks. And so each house was dedicated. There was, like, the Russian Jews, the Lithuanian Jews, the Polish Jews.
The orange Jews, the apple Jews.
Exactly, exactly. And so once I saw that group of Canadians, I didn't see anybody else except I kept hearing children laughing in the distance. Okay, and here's the freaky part. So I find the Polish Jewish house because I lost part of my family, as we all did.
Well, that was careless of you.
Mm-hmm, I know. And I'm you know, wanted to get back to the visitor center, couldn't find my way out. It was like being in a funhouse.
Oh.
And I started sweating, and I started, like, shaking, and I turn the corner, and there's this wall of names, and there's this spotlight, and I walk up to where the spotlight is and is highlighting my family's name on that wall.
Whoa.
And then all of a sudden, I could find my way out. It was like my family drew me there and was like, witness this. It was the... That's not funny at all, but it was intense. And it was amazing, and I'll never forget that.
And it was Kokin, it was...
Orlinsky. That was my grandmother's maiden name.
How many Orlinskys were on that wall?
It was just the family name, but it was about a dozen people because it was one of those Orthodox Jewish families, you know, eight kids and a bazillion grandkids and that kind of... So it was a whole branch of the family that we lost.
Having so much fun here with...
Oh, yay! That's a bringer-upper there, isn't it? Woohoo!
Now, she has written, though, we're moving away from Auschwitz and
please, quickly.
Let's talk about your panties.
Okay, or yours.
Yes, actually, no. How did you know? Can you guess the color?
White.
Well, they were, but now they're yellow. But yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, so she has written this book, When I Die... Take My Panties, Turning Your Darkest Moments into Your Greatest Gifts. So the Auschwitz thing does lead into this. So what would be an example from the book of dealing with something horrible, terrible, kind of like the current election cycle, and turning that into a hilarious, delightful, funny gift?
Well, my mom, I wrote the book as an ode to my mom who passed away from ovarian cancer, okay, which is a crappy disease, and, you know, I don't want to go into that, but she and I used to write jokes together for my stand-up. Yeah.
Wait, stop. What's a joke that you wrote with your mama?
Well, so I called her, I said, Mom, I have this joke, I'm going to run it by you. She goes, okay. I go, well, you know how you're going to get a second. So I'm going to say, my mom's going to get a second opinion. And I told her, I'll save you the time and the money. I got your opinion. And my mom says, what? I said, you're going to die. Dead silence, just like you. And she starts laughing. And she's like, yeah, that's pretty funny, but I think we need to work on it. Next day she calls me. She goes, you know, I decided that wasn't funny. Here's what's funny. Remember all those clothes I bought that I told you to return because I probably won't get to wear them? Screw you. I'm wearing them. I cut all the tags off them.
Yeah, go. Good for her.
Yeah. So, I mean, we used to, you know, she had a, because of the way ovarian cancer is, she looked like she was about 9 months pregnant and used to eat snacks off her belly while we were watching Dancing with the Stars. Like, what are you doing? She goes, oh, I used to do this with you when I was pregnant. I go, you'd eat snacks? She goes, no, I'd balance the ashtray on my belly while I had a drink in one hand. Because back in the day, you could smoke a drink.
Right.
I'm like, Mom, come on. She goes, yeah, every once in a while, you'd kick and we'd laugh. I'd almost lose the ashtray.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it was it turned into a good memory. I mean, even though there's a giant friggin' tumor in there,
Yeah, we named it Sam. You know, so when she gave birth to it, it could be a boy or girl tumor. You know, it could be Sam.
Did they remove it, or there was no point?
No, there was no way to remove it at that point. This was like over 5 years, like 5 years into her cancer, which was pretty amazing. I mean, she really defied all the odds. You know, she had a less than 30% chance of living 5 years, and she lived 5 years, 1 month, and 8 days.
So do you think that the humor contributed to her living longer, or is that just bogus science?
No, I think it's true, because I think when you're laughing, when you can bring, this is what I do with all my clients, if you can bring laughter to a serious situation, first of all, you know, anytime you lose your sense of humor, you know you're being a victim. You know that you're like, oh, life is terrible and it's all awful and sucks.
Life is terrible and it is all awful and sucks.
Said like a true Jew.
Absolutely.
They tried to kill us, they didn't. Let's eat. Yay. You know, but seriously, if you can bring a sense of humor to it and recognize, you know what, it's the foibles of being a human being. We're all the same. Doesn't matter what you've gone through. Somebody else out there has gone through just as tough.
I don't think LeBron James has gone through what I've gone through.
But we don't know what his childhood was like. We don't know what it was like for him growing up. We don't know that part of it. I mean, somewhere there's a story about that.
He wasn't bar mitzvahed. He did not have that humiliation.
Or
so
bar mitzvahed or bat mitzvahed.
One presumes he wasn't even circumcised.
This
so
is probably true, yeah.
Yeah.
But we don't, you know, but I think when we're dealing with tough stuff, we think we're the only one. We think that nobody else can understand. I have coached thousands of people over 20 years, and I have heard it all.
Let me ask you, why do people need coaches? I mean, people are intelligent, most of them. They know what they have to do. They know what's ahead of them. What is a coach? What is the purpose? What do you do?
Yeah, so think about this. Why does an Olympic athlete, a gold medalist, need a coach?
Because if they didn't have the coach, they'd be sitting on the couch eating Cheetos. The coach is saying, get off the couch, do 100 push-ups.
Right, and the coach is also watching their performance and seeing the little nuances that they could change that would make them more effective and operate at their peak performance. So as a life coach, it's really difficult, myself included, for me to see my way out of something when I'm in the midst of it. Having a set of eyes that is an impartial observer and has an impartial point of view with the experience and background that I have, I can see things you can't see. And I can ask questions that you wouldn't think about so that you can ultimately figure out what your blind spots are.
Okay. Without naming names, what would be an example where you turn somebody's life around where the person didn't even realize their life needed necessarily turning around?
Well, 5 years ago, more like 15 years ago, because I just got back in touch with this guy. There was a guy in one of the programs that I used to lead who was there because he was about to break up with his girlfriend. Was like, that was the thing he was going to do was break up with her. Here were all the reasons. He wasn't being successful in business. I come to find out a year ago, they're getting married. He's super successful in his business, and he equates it back to a conversation that we had. You know, another friend.
But again, what? I mean, give me a specific. What did you talk about?
Well, I'll give you another example because that one I actually was 15 years ago. I don't remember. I'll tell you another guy.
I don't have to name names.
A guy in Colorado who was really having difficulty dating. Right. And as a conversation that we had, one of the things he realizes, he's a gift. He really is a gift. And he's got something to offer women, and he shouldn't be so hard on himself. And he has been in awesome relationships ever since, and he still thinks about that. He's like, I always remember, no matter how the relationship goes, I'm a gift to women.
Oh, now, was he, in your memory, not an attractive fellow?
No, he's a lovely guy. You know,
I mean, physically.
Yeah, good-looking guy, and intelligent, and fit, and really has smart and a great job. And
so, how was he holding himself back?
Well, he thought he was somehow deficient, somehow didn't have what it took, and was really shy around women.
And so that translated to his not being good on a date, and
right, and feeling awkward, and not approaching women he wanted to approach because he didn't know his own worth. So out of our coaching together, he realized not only his own worth, but he realized he really does have something to contribute. And I gave him this exercise. I said, you've got to be Baskin Robbins. I said, he goes, what's that? I go, let's just take the case. You don't know what you want in a woman. I want you to go.
Well, I know what I want in a woman, but
I said, I want you to go on 32 dates with 32 different women. And I want you to actually notice what you appreciate about each woman. And I want you to appreciate them and acknowledge them for the gift they are, because then you'll get the gift you are. And everybody really enjoys being listened to and being acknowledged by somebody else when you're real and really connected with that person. And it turned his whole life around.
Now, see, my problem is I've been going with Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I don't tell my wife, when I date and then go with women, it's just always like Chunky Monkey.
Or fish food.
Very bad, yeah.
Yeah. So that's probably not a good reference, but, you know.
And speaking of fish food, we're talking about the woman who wrote, When I Die, Take My Panties. I don't even know what that means. Jen?
Yes. Koken.
C-O-K-E-N. The book is put out by what press?
Well, it's Persona Press, but I had such a great response to it. A traditional publisher picked me up, and it'll be re-released in June through Morgan James Publishing.
Morgan James Publishing. I'm saying you can get it on Amazon and all those kinds.
You can get it on Amazon for a bit. At some point, it's going to go into pre-sale again. You won't be able to get it because right now it's print on demand.
Whoa.
Yeah, pretty cool. Huh?
So, and have you gotten encomia about the book? People have read it and say how wonderful it is. And
yeah, I have a bunch of great reviews on Amazon. And it's interesting. Some things I didn't, because, you know, for me, it was a cathartic experience. It was grieving over my mom. But I made a promise to her that her death would make as big of a difference as her life. She was a teacher. She was a principal. She taught tap, you know. Wow. Yeah, she taught tap to her retirement community. She won Senior Idol down in Sarasota, Florida for her tapping, you know. And she was such a – I mean, she never said an unkind word about anybody, and I strive to be like her every day. And
I can't go 10 minutes without saying an unkind word about people.
It's hard. It's hard, especially with this election cycle, right? Oh, baby.
Hey, you have been a comedian, too.
Yes.
You know, how long did you do that?
Well, when I was living in Denver, once a week, all the time, for like 6 years.
Whoa. What club?
You know, all the like, well, I was at Comedy Works, but also Lion's Lair and, you know, all the places where you would do the open mic nights, everywhere I could go. And in fact, funny story, I was down in Florida visiting my folks, and I had this commitment to perform once a week. So I called McGurdy's, which is like a very well-known comedy club down there, and wound up opening for some guy that was going to be on HBO the next week. And he gave me 10 minutes because he didn't know me from whomever. I just called and said, I'm a comedian from Denver and I'm committed to performing once a week. Can I have some time tonight? He's like, yeah, 10 minutes. You got it.
Unpaid, but still.
Unpaid, yeah, but still. I had the opportunity to perform for my parents and all their friends. And
who was that guy? Did he turn out to be famous later?
I couldn't remember who he was, but sure he is at this point. Quite famous.
Did you hobnob with any well-known comedians?
No, not any well-known ones, but you think about like Josh Blue and Chuck Roy, who are big in Denver. You know, they were like people to try to be like when I was on the like once a week circuit. You know, you wanted to be like Chuck Roy.
You don't really want to be like Josh Blue. You would
not exactly like Josh Blue. Yeah, but seeing him on Last Comic Standing was phenomenal and amazing, and just seeing his success has been great. And that is a guy that really, you know, he knows how to take what would be called a deficiency and turn it into a gift for himself. He's an amazing guy.
So let me ask, in the 6 years that you were doing stand up, did you ever move to a somewhat, because you're doing basically, you know, 10 minutes free open mic, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Did it ever move to the next level?
Well, it's interesting. So I did a bit for Hebe magazine.
Okay.
You know, Hebe magazine. And my friend was putting together this thing around Christmas time, and it was seven comedians who were Jewish. And he looked at me, he goes, you're funny, you're Jewish, you have 7 minutes. I was like, all right. Everybody else talked about the Holocaust.
Of course.
You know, like, really? This is, you know, so I came on stage and said, wow. And nobody was really laughing. Like, the room was dead. And I said, you know, I'm going to give you a little bit of a relief. I'm not going to talk about the Holocaust. And the room erupted in cheers. You know, they don't, it's too soon. I'm sorry. I don't care if it's like 70 years from now. It's still too soon. Yeah.
Let's talk about 9/11.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, and then from there, myself and a friend before I left Colorado did a show over in Old Town Arvada. And I actually had 25 minutes, and it was a paid gig called Hot Chicks with Brains. And we wore shirts that revealed our cleavage. So in case we weren't funny, at least people would have something nice to look at.
Now you're talking.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Unfortunately, tonight.
Today, I'm not doing that. Yeah, well, I can't be with a rabbi. You know, you're the guy.
Yes, you can.
Cover, you know. Yeah.
Well, you're not wearing a shaitel. You're not wearing the thing on your head.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You should. You should everywhere.
No.
It's a fashion statement.
You should. Fashion statement. Some of those wigs are pretty incredible and expensive.
Oh, I know.
My sister's Orthodox.
So I'm wearing one. I'm wearing a wig that has a bald spot in it, so it looks authentic.
Wow, yes. That's amazing. It looks very authentic.
Thank you. Thank you ever so much.
You're welcome.
And the beard is fake, too. What can I tell you? Yeah. Hang you. We're talking with Jen.
What part of you is real, Rabbi?
At this point, if it's half of it, me is making megal at this point. What can I tell you? We're talking to the author of When I Die, Take My Panties. Her name is Jen Kokin. By the way, you can find out more about her at jenkokin.com, J-E-N-C-O-K-E-N, jenkokin.com. So you've been politically active, governmentally active in environmental things. Are you still, especially in this insane political season?
No, not at all.
Why not?
Because, you know, when I left, I really was active when I was here in Colorado. I was actually chair of the Denver County Democratic Party and ran for office for the State House. And when I moved east for a job and really to be closer to my family back there. It just wasn't what was pulling me or calling me. You know, I was in the middle of writing my book. That's also, I've done a couple of sets in D.C. One was disastrous.
It happens.
Yeah, one was great. But I was busy writing the book and publishing the book and trying to find a publisher and that sort of thing. So, and began to do work for nonprofit organizations, raising money for them.
Actually, I've got to ask this. You did one gig that was disastrous. Was it the same material?
Yes. Yes, but here's the distinction. So the club is no longer there. I was at a friend said, let's go see comedy. We did, and the comedians were not that funny. And I pulled the MC aside. I said, if you want someone funny, you really ought to put me on the stage.
Whoa, that's ballsy.
Yeah, I have balls.
Okay. Oh, no wonder you're not wearing the cleavage showing thing. You got hairy, too.
Not really. But chutzpah, they say.
Good for you, though. Yeah.
Yeah, and he said, great, here's the date and time. I want you here. But then I couldn't figure out, I said, okay. And then there was never able to follow up with him to figure out how to get to him to say, yes, I'll be there. So I just showed up. And when I walked in the green room, he was like, I did not think you were going to be here. Well, it was Black History Month. Okay.
Oh, no,
no. It's an African-American club. It's a 200-seat place. I'm used to doing small venues where you can actually, there's 10 or 20 tables, and we can talk about the time I did a set for a group of people I did not know were part of Adult Friend Finder. That's a whole other.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we can talk about that one. Yeah. So, and he said, oh, by the way, we want to do this improv piece, and the other woman who was going to perform with us isn't here. Would you perform with us?
In an improv troupe, okay.
And I said, well, yeah, I said, sure. Well, I was supposed to be the slave, and they were my master.
Oh, no.
And it was a horrible piece, and it sucked, and then I had the cold five. So when I had the cold five, I had to start everybody off. This piece sucked. Then I come out to do the cold five. And it's 200-person place, which is ginormous. All I can see are seven angry black women. That are, and just kind of looking up at me. I'm like, okay, you designed this set for white people in Denver. This is not going to go well. And you did no research into who the audience was or what you were stepping into. So I learned a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I learned a lot about how to play to a bigger room. So I definitely grew from that.
Oh, good. I mean, even from that one time.
Absolutely. Because that, for me, you've got to learn from everything. You don't have to, but that's really been my life's work is how do I learn from every shitty circumstance I've come across?
Well, now half of your set, no matter what, is about grape soda. So it's
yeah. So then I did Laugh Riot with the Hyatt, which is right in downtown Bethesda.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't know I'd actually performed there 10 years earlier. Now, how did I know that? I show up and he's got my headshot from 10 years earlier, which is this kind of low cut thing with my hair up, and I don't, my godson's with me, and he goes, I haven't seen this. This picture before, didn't realize I had performed 10 years earlier, but that one's online, jencoken.com. If you go to YouTube, that one's actually
online. That night went better. That
went very well. I had some friends in the audience too, but I had learned more about timing. Every time I look back over that set, all that material is still good. There's some pieces I would shave off. I wouldn't do this or that. And I'm honestly want to get back on the road again.
So it sounds like you haven't given up on this stand-up. But wait a minute, was the black people your worst hell night as a comedian, or was it the friend thing?
Adult Friend Finder? Yeah. That was just awkward. So do you know what Adult Friend Finder is? All right, so it's this online group where you're in an open relationship and you find other people to have sex with.
Oh my God, I've got to tell my dear wife Miriam Libby, this exists! Holy shit!
It's an adult friend finder. It's not like when you were a kid and you have a little friend finder. Now you've got an adult because we're going to be adults.
Yeah, but it sounds like there's more than friendship going on.
It's more than friendship. It's friends with benefits. Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know
anything about it.
I will find out now.
And I don't know. There's a guy by the name of Andy Kaufman who's a wonderful person.
Chew!
Yes, who just passed away. He had cancer. He died of
Now, no relation to Andy Kaufman.
No relation. But it was his room, and so I showed up, and he pulled me aside, and he was like, by the way, I should tell you, these are some of the people that are here from a meetup group. They contacted me and wanted to do a meetup, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but that should be good. They're all there, they're horny, they want to have a good time, they want to loosen up, right. They're probably drinking. Shouldn't that be a great crowd?
Well, it is, except as a single woman, right? So I'm there, and one of my opening bits is always, my name's Jen Koken, I hope you're enjoying the evening, make sure to tip your bartenders for me, because I don't drink. Is what I would say. And people will go, oh, and they'd start clapping. I'm like, no, I'm not an AA. I'm allergic. I get allergic when I drink, my clothes fall off. I get allergic to cotton and wool, and then I do people start laughing.
That's cute. All right, so that's a great line for that crowd, no?
Right, great line, and it's always a good sort of icebreaker, and then I look around the crowd and go, okay, so who's an enabler? Great. And I'm like, oh, you're hot. Meet me at the bar in the back. But then you're at the group with Adult Friend Finder.
They're going to do that.
You're serious. And no, it's part of the bit. So that was the awkward part.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a hell night sort of a thing.
No, I've never really been heckled, but I've always dealt with the heckle. I've had somebody had their cell phone go off. I'm sure you've had this too.
Well, yeah, that happens in the theater. I mean, it happens.
I answer their phone. I'm like, give it to me. give me the phone. Especially in the front row. I'm like, yo, idiot, give me the phone. Ooh. And I'm like, hi. Yeah, uh-huh. My name's Jen. Yep, I'm performing right now. Yep, you're part of the bit. Can I put you on speaker? Put him on speaker. And then that usually doesn't happen.
And then they scream, send the ambulance, he's dying.
Yeah. So yeah. Right.
So I mean, but have you been developing new material? Do you have a recent bit or joke that you can share with us to our listening audience? And I will make believe I'm 50 people laughing uproariously.
Okay. All right. Well, I used to be Christian.
Oh, no, wait, that's just the setup. I'm sorry.
Until Donald Trump's candidacy scared the bejesus out of me.
Oh, that's good. That's cute. Very cute. So you're still a Democrat.
I'm still a Democrat. Die hard Democrat, yeah.
But you're not really helping or polling or going house to house or
nothing. I mean,
sending emails.
Nothing. I'm doing nothing. I'm not. I could have told you like the number of days and hours down to the election, and I know it's Tuesday, but today I couldn't. And I have lots of friends who are still in politics. I just am not interested in being in that line of work.
Is politics as disgusting and sleazy as we all know it is?
Well, you know, they used to say don't go into politics if you don't want to see sausage being made. That has been the adage for a long time. You know, you don't go to Capitol Hill because the making of policy is really, it's a blood game. You know, it's a blood sport. I now say you shouldn't go into politics unless you don't want to watch a little baby lamb being led to the slaughter. Because the change in the climate, the change in the way people interact with one another, I can't stomach. The personal jabs, and we've seen it times a godzillion with this particular election, it's hard to be a part of something you have no taste for.
Although I will say I would rather see, me being a rabbi, a lamb led to slaughter than sausage being made, because it's unkosher and it's,
right, exactly.
It's pig.
It's trafe. You don't want to be around trafe.
It is trafe.
Yeah.
Were you ever, I know you were conservative raised, were you kosher?
No, my grandmother was, but then I'd go to her house to take her out to lunch, and I'd say, Grandma, where do you want to go? And she'd get this smile on her face, and she'd go, Red Lobster.
Granny. Wow.
As long as it's not in the house.
Oh, I know. I know.
Right? It's not trafe. As long as it's not in the house, you know. So, yeah, I'd take her to Red Lobster for a lobster roll, and she'd get really, like, totally stoked about that.
Yeah, because it's like forbidden thing. It was like, completely. It's even better. It's like bacon. Oh, bacon.
Yeah. I mean, at her funeral, you're probably familiar with this.
A lobster in her casket or something.
No, but her Shabbos Agoy was there because they were best friends, right? Because as an Orthodox Jewish family, they had a young woman who came to turn on the lights in the stove after sundown and came to turn it off. So it was her Shabbos Agoy, and that was a lifelong friend, her friend Mary. So interesting to me.
No, yeah. I mean, they used to do that. With all the respect, it's egiotic, but it's what they do. You know?
Yeah. Well, I remember being with my sister over one Sabbath, and to keep the meal warm, she had a cookie tray on the gas stove and kept that on the entire time.
Oh, that's safe.
With eight kids in the house. So I bought her a crock pot and sent it to her. Like, this is what you need. Keep the crock pot on low. It's all you need. Don't have the gas stove on overnight.
Yeah. Smart. Yeah. See, a smart lady we're talking with, Jen Kokin. So may I ask, on a personal level, you're a very attractive woman.
Okay.
In very good shape, very funny, you do comedy, you're impassioned about politics. Why are you a single cat lady? Okay. How many cats do you have?
I have two. One just adopted me.
You can't
turn them away. I was married. I'm divorced. You know, I've had great relationships. I'm in a relationship now that kind of has its ups and downs. You know, we're at the upside. We were at a downside.
Wait. Wouldn't you? Then do you go to a life coach and say, I'm in a relationship. I'm having ups and downs. Help.
Oh, yeah.
So what did they tell you? How do they say? How do you get through the down part?
Well, you know, it's interesting.
Viagra, basically. But
that's how you get through the down part. I don't think that works for the lady parts. You know what I'm saying?
I got you. Yeah.
I was actually talking with one of my coaches just a couple days ago. And was sharing with her what he and I had been talking about. And she interrupts me. She goes, well, you want him to forgive you for being human. But it doesn't sound like you want to forgive him. And I said, no, I don't want to forgive him. And then we both started laughing. And I realized I can't ask him to do something I'm not willing to do. So
does this go to the adult friend finder thing? Or what?
No. It's just, you know, you, when you're in any relationship, friendship or otherwise, or marriage, you have human moments. And, you know, there's going to be ups and downs. And if you can't forgive each other and understand that we have our foibles, and, you know, the relationship is like the stock market. You don't want to check in on it daily. You want to look at trends over time. So if the trend's generally up, you keep stock in that company. If it's generally down, probably time to sell.
So are you, where are you? In the up part?
In the up part.
How long have you been with this person?
A little over a year. So it's sort of like that year point of like, what are we doing here and how's it going? And I was like, yeah, I'm done. This was about 2 weeks ago. And then we had a long conversation yesterday.
Yesterday? Oh, my God.
Yeah, so now we're, now we'll see what happens.
Is he Jewish?
No, he's Indian.
He's Indian, like a woo-woo Indian or the South Asian kind of, you know, chapati Indian?
So South Asian, but he's a Southern California guy. He grew up in Southern California, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, if it's meant to work, God willing, it will work. If it's not, it's not.
Exactly, and that's how we feel, too.
But can you see, if it does work, can you see yourself putting another ring on it or you'll never go there again?
You know, that's a really good question. The marriage itself... I would be in a committed relationship with somebody. Would I actually get married? I don't know. I'd have to come to that bridge when I cross it.
You come to that coken when you cross it.
Exactly. You know, but I love being in a partnership with somebody. You know, I really do like having the person who we're supporting each other and cheering each other on. And, you know, and that person's got to be my best friend. And that's the basis of anything is a great friendship. And that's really what he and I are working on now is a great friendship. Can I see myself being married? I'd have to figure it out. I don't know. But certainly not a big wedding or anything like that. My vision is St. John's Island and the Virgin Islands.
Saint? Mm-hmm. Couldn't you go to Aruba or something more Jewy?
No, because it's 98% of it is national park.
Ooh.
So you can camp there.
Oh, yeah, a Jew cannot go camping.
Oh, yes, I'm a camper.
How do you become a camper if you're Jewish?
Well,
I can't open a can with a can opener. How do you camp?
Well, I think I've been a little bit different given that, you know, as a young person, even growing up in middle class Cleveland, I had what I call my orange jumpsuit future. Where I was a juvenile delinquent, was doing drugs and robbed a house.
Whoa. Gee, all right. The drugs, even the Jewish kids, they try the drugs. What's the hardest drug you ever tried?
Oh, I think I one time tried a Valium when I was like in ninth grade and that was it.
Oh, did
that was like I never did it again. But, you know, I was smoking pot and...
That is not the hardest thing you ever... Pot is harder than Valium, no?
Oh, no, I think Valium's harder than pot. Well, I guess because it's prescription or something like that. Right. Yeah, but I mean, that's really it.
You robbed a house. What the hell?
So it was the biggest pot dealer in our neighborhood, and a friend of ours was babysitting, and we decided we were going to go. They had like pot around the house, so we took some. And then they owned a gas station, so we took some of the coins, like $150. And they knew exactly, right?
And what you figured they wouldn't tell the police because the police couldn't go to the house and...
Exactly. But they reported us to the police and we were on probation.
Well hell yeah.
Yeah.
What happened to the guy with that pot?
He was still, you know, doing his thing. They didn't talk about that with the police, of course.
So he just talked about the coins at the gas station.
Yeah. And so that, you know, then I really had to like look at my parents square in the face and myself square in the face and make a choice about what I was going to do with my life. Was I going to continue to, you know, do things that were sort of rebellious? Because it's like middle-class Jewish family. What the hell am I?
Yeah, I mean, you've gone from a reformed Jew to a reformed school.
Exactly. That's a good point. And I really, it's a lot of what I talk about in my book, that life circumstances don't have to determine your future. Only you can determine it because only you can respond to what's happened to you. That's what I call responsibility, your ability to respond to a situation.
Responsibility.
Yeah,
kind of.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I chose literally to make a difference. And my life became about politics and working with organizations and starting organizations and mentoring kids. And I really just turned my life around at that point. So I've always been a little bit different. I've always kind of marched to my own drummer. So when my girlfriends were talking about having kids and being married, my only thought was, yeah, but there's so many kids that are unwanted in the world. I'd rather adopt.
Did you?
No, I never had. I have stepkids from my marriage, who I'm connected to and close to, and who I adore, and you know, really good friends with my ex-husband and his wife, and we support one another, and that's a wonderful thing. But I've just always kind of marched my own drummer. So, do I see myself with like getting married again and settling down? Absolutely not. You know, getting married, yes. Settling down, never.
Oh.
I'm kind of a world traveler. I'm a little bit of a vagabond. I'd love to live all over the world, and with the work I do, I can. I can coach people from anywhere.
What is the best advice you've ever gotten from anybody about anything?
Wow, I've gotten so much good advice. The best advice is let it go. Just like the movie Frozen, that whatever you're upset about, whatever you think somebody's done to you, whatever you think life's done to you, it's not personal. Life is not personally out to get you. Shit happens. How are you going to deal with it?
Oh, hold on. Just did. Oh, boy. And this is why I broke a second pair of panties. So I'm good.
Good for you. Yeah. Good for you.
Hold on. I've got a shift in my chair at the moment. But continue.
That was a squishy sound I heard. Oh jeez. Oh. That's moist. That's
just a little.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a wet kind of thing.
See, this chair used to be white.
Yeah. Well, so did your underwear, you said earlier. Yeah,
So I'm sorry. You were saying, though, about shit happens.
I think, things happen to us in our lives. And we can either choose, literally choose, to be a victim of it and the effect of it, or just realize, you know what? That's life. Stuff happens. You know, if everyone says, I want an even keel in my life. Well, do you know what it means when you're in the hospital and things are on an even keel?
All right. But hold on. As someone who visited Auschwitz, albeit in the winter with a bunch of Canadians, would you tell an Auschwitz survivor shit happens?
I would say it happened. You can either choose to dwell on it and be ticked off and mad and live your life angrily. Or
how could you not? How could you not?
Because it happened. It's in the past. So are you going to continue to be angry now and be angry with the people around you that you love and continue to wall yourself off? Doesn't mean you have to forgive them. It doesn't mean you agree with what happened in any way, shape, or form. But understand, it happened. Now it's time for you and your heart and your space to be able to open yourself up to other people. Because are you going to let what the Nazis did determine you? You're going to give away your power to the Nazis because they destroyed you or your family? You could. But then that leaves you powerless. So you have a choice about how you're going to move forward in life. So stuff happens. Let it go. Don't take it personally. It's not now, with the Jews, you could say it was personal to them, right?
And there's always, the other side of revenge.
Sure. And you could look at any other civil war that's been happening, like back in the 90s, Rwanda. That was personal between the Hutus and the Tutsis, correct? Right. But you can either...
Because that's how the Tutsis roll.
Oh, my God, he did it. So you can either live life upset for the rest of your life and angry and venomous, or you can say, yes, it happened, but I'm not going to give away my power to those people. I'm going to empower myself. And I get to now say how my life is going to go and the difference I can make and the contribution I can make. Maybe the contribution is to be able to talk about what happened and talk about how you forgave. Even forgiveness doesn't mean you agree with what happened. Forgiveness simply means you're giving up your right to be upset about what happened.
Let me say that again.
Yeah, do it again.
So forgiveness doesn't mean you say, I forgive you, it's okay what you did. No, it's not okay. But I'm letting go of my right to be upset about what happened.
Isn't that giving the other person a get-out-of-jail-free card?
No, because you don't have to be friends with that person. You don't have to see that person again. You can choose your boundaries. You can choose to write about the horrors and atrocities and bring press attention to what happened. You can choose to speak to student groups, and you can choose to, start the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is one of the premier.
Is that something you did?
No. But it's one of the most amazing organizations. I've been supporting them since 1988 when I was giving them $6 a month, because as an organizer, I was making $11,000 a year. But they're the ones who have caused the KKK to go bankrupt, because they keep suing them and pointing out all their racist tendencies. So there's a way that you can not get back at what happened, but make sure history doesn't repeat itself. But if you're angry, how creative can you be? You know that.
Oh, I get pretty creative. I'm venomous and vile.
Yeah,
so
you just use that to fuel yourself.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah.
I'm fueled by rage, but not this morning, as I talk to the delightful Jen Kokin. I want to thank you so much for joining us in the neighborhood. And I want to remind everybody that you have to get her book, When I Die, Take My Panties, Turning Your Darkest Moments into Your Greatest Gifts. You can still currently get the original edition of what was a P something?
Persona Press,
Persona Books. But if you wait a couple, should they wait or should they get it now?
Well, either one. If they want to read it now, they can get it now. In about a month or so, it'll be pre-sale on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the big book sites and that sort of thing. So they can order it pre-sale. And I think by Christmas, they'll be able to download it.
Hanukkah.
Right, Kwanzaa.
Yeah, really,
Christmas,
honestly.
Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Festivus for the rest of us, Hanukkah.
Okay. Yeah, stick with that. Right, yeah, okay. Or Shoah, considering what we've been talking about.
Yeah,
yes. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been absolutely delightful talking with Jen Koken here in the day. But I want to thank you. I want to wish you much more continued success. I hope you get back out on those stages and do a bit more of the stand-up and finding the humor in things. But at least you're finding the humor in the books that you write and in the advice that you get. What's a piece of advice, having known me now for all of 40 minutes, what's advice that you would give to me, Rabbi Saul Solomon?
I would say for you to keep making people laugh. That's important, because when people are laughing, it changes their neuronal patterns in their brain, literally change your brain patterns, brings positive energy to you, and you're bringing positive energy to the people around you. So keep making people laugh.
Thank you, Chang. I can only say the same for you. Much continued health and success and laughter from Jen Koken. Thank you so much. And shalom to you.
Shalom to you, Rabbi. Thank you for having me.